Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. You know, each day we live, we have a series of choices of where we spend our time, what to think, and how to go about our day. Some people choose to fill their day with positive energy and worthwhile things. That's why I like uplifting podcasts. This podcast is born from a deep desire to help us all live a happier life, and the firm belief that a powerful way to make that happen is to open our eyes to new ways of seeing life. So, hopefully, today, in this time together, we'll get a new perspective of how to think and live better. And if you enjoy these podcasts, please share them with a friend. It may surprise you. It just may be what they're looking for today. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about your teaching to potential. If I asked you to tell me where Bolivia is located, most of you could correctly guess in South America. But if I asked you where in South America, could you tell me? Bolivia is landlocked and features Amazonian plains, mountains, and the high-altitude Andean snow-capped peaks. It contains the Pantanal, the largest tropical wetland in the world, and is bordered by Brazil, Paraguay, Argentina, Chile, and Peru. It was here that Jaime was born in 1930. Jaime Escalante taught mathematics and physics for 12 years in Bolivia before he immigrated to the United States. He worked various jobs while teaching himself English and earned another college degree before eventually returning to the classroom as an educator. In 1974, he began to teach at Garfield High School. Escalante was initially so disheartened by the lack of preparation of his students that he called his former employer and asked for his old job back. However, he eventually changed his mind about returning to work when he found 12 students willing to take an algebra class. Shortly after Escalante came to Garfield High School, its accreditation became threatened. So, he responded by offering AP calculus. This was the opposite of what administrators wanted. They wanted math tailored to the lowest skill level of the students. He had already earned the criticism of an administrator who disapproved of his requiring the students to answer a homework question before being allowed into the classroom. He told the administration that if students don't have to challenge themselves, then there's no teaching, there's no learning going on, there's no potential. We're just babysitting. Determined to change the status quo, Escalante persuaded a few students that they could control their futures with the right education. And he promised them that they could get jobs in engineering, electronics, and computers if they would learn math. "I'll teach you math, and that's your language," he said, "but you need to sit in the first row, not the back, because you're going to learn more than anybody." The school administration opposed Escalante frequently during his first few years. He was threatened with dismissal by an assistant principal because he was coming too early, leaving too late, and failing to get the administrative permission to raise funds to pay for his students' advanced placement tests. He instructed his first calculus class in 1978. He taught calculus to 5 students, 2 of whom passed the AP calculus test. The next year, the class size increased to 9, and the next year to 15, 14 of whom passed the test. In 1982, he gained media attention when 18 of his students passed the AP calculus exam. The testing service found the scores to be suspicious because they all made exactly the same math error on the 6th problem. 14 of those who passed were asked to take the exam again, and 12 of them agreed to retake the test, and all did well enough to have their scores reinstated. In 1988, a book, Escalante, the Best Teacher in America, and a film, Stand and Deliver, were released based on Jaime's class results. Teachers and other interested observers asked to sit in on his classes from that point forward, and he shared with them, "The key to my success with youngsters is very simple. Work hard." Escalante received visits from political leaders and celebrities, including President Ronald Reagan, and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Jaime would eventually return to Bolivia, but before he did, he changed the lives of hundreds of students in Los Angeles. So, why do you and other teachers teach? Because we all teach, whether it's to a team or a family or a classroom. What is it that brings joy to the teacher? Well, one fifth grade science teacher shared a story about a boy, Michael, who struggled academically. Reading was a daily frustration, math was a chore, and he often felt invisible in the classroom. But one day, during a unit on electricity, the teacher brought in magnets, wires, and batteries and challenged the students to create something that could move. Most students tinkered a bit and then gave up. Michael, however, grew absorbed in the task. He twisted wires, tested connections, and after many failed attempts, finally built a simple motor that spun a wheel. The moment it whirled to life, Michael shouted, "It works!" His classmates turned to look, suddenly seeing him not as the boy who lagged behind, but as an inventor. The teacher later said that the real joy of the day was not the motor, but the discovery of potential inside of Michael. That single moment shifted how Michael saw himself and changed the way the class saw him as well. Teachers like you do not simply give information. They guide team members into the thrill of uncovering truths for themselves. Each discovery builds confidence, creating joy not only for the team member, but for the teacher who witnesses it. Beyond lessons and subjects, teaching is ultimately about relationships. Students and team members often forget lectures or dates or formulas or trainings, but they remember the teachers and trainers who made them feel seen and valued. The story of Krista McAuliffe, the teacher selected to be the first civilian in space, captures this spirit. Before the Challenger tragedy in 1986, McAuliffe often spoke about why she loved teaching. She famously said, "I touch the future when I teach." A high school English teacher once noticed that one of her students, a quiet girl named Sarah, often doodled in her notebook during class. Instead of reprimanding her for being distracted, the teacher asked if she could see what she was drawing. And it turned out that Sarah was writing poems in the margins of her paper. The teacher encouraged her to submit one to the school contest. Nervously, Sarah did, and to her surprise, she won. Years later, Sarah became a published author. In her first book, she dedicated her work to the English teacher, writing, "To the one who saw me before I saw myself." The joy of teaching and training comes from the human connection. It's about a bond between the trainer and the team member, where encouragement can change the trajectory of life. So what about you? Most of us have been teachers in one form or another. Have you felt the joy of helping someone discover something new or get curious or learn something they didn't know before? If so, then you, like me, may believe that teaching and training is a God-given desire embedded in our DNA to help others rise to who they can be. When you are teaching, you are doing a noble work. Now, the root of the word noble is no, spelled G-N-O. It means to know, to acknowledge, to notice, to recognize. While we think of being noble as showing high moral principles, its root is more akin to recognizing we have a duty to share knowledge. When I was a young man, like all young men, I had the typical troubles with self-worth and identity in high school. I tried in so many ways to find myself, so much so that I never felt at rest or at peace. It was a difficult time for me. I had a coach, Tim Pontius. When I would come to practice, Coach Pontius would always be there. He was always at ease. He would often come over and sit next to me, or during our warm-up, he would stretch nearby. He was never in a hurry. He just asked questions and listened. He would pause and wait for me to talk a little more. He confided in me. And over the course of several years, his noble gift of being at peace, started to rub off on me. He taught me about athletics, but he also taught me about me. He taught me that who I was enough. This was a tremendous gift to me. In fact, it gave me confidence that I would have never found on my own at a very difficult time in my life when I needed self-worth. And I've reflected back on Coach Pontius many times in my life, and I wonder, did he know he had this gift? Is that why he was a coach, to help others reach their potential? I don't know, but I think he knew he had a noble responsibility to give of his endowed strengths, and he took time to connect with me and others. So, if you aspire to be a better teacher or trainer, can I share a couple of key thoughts to help you be more influential and help you be focused on helping others reach their potential? When I finished graduate school and started my first full-time job in Cincinnati, Ohio, I realized that what I was earning was not enough to support our family of four. So I got a part-time job teaching at night at Xavier University. My topic, Accounting 101. Not an easy subject to teach, and even more, as a required class, not many students would have elected to take the class if it was left up to them. My first classes were challenging, to say the least, but I soon learned an important lesson. When you're teaching, you must create a meaningful and important hook. A hook is something you place in the student's brain that is hanging there for additional information. You see, information conveyed is not very likely to stay in a student's memory, but a hook will cause them to hang what you convey on something that they are looking for. For example, in my accounting class, I would create a hook by asking, how many of you want to work in business? Much of the room would raise their hands. Then I would say, well, accounting is the language of business. The more you can speak the language, the better business person you will be. Or if I was teaching what an asset and liability were, I would say, tell me all the things you own. We would make a list. These are assets. Then we would make a list of all obligations or debts. And when they had done that, I would say, these are liabilities. By making the list, they could remember things better. They had a hook in their mind. So for example, if a teacher is introducing the concept of electronic circuits, they might start with a simple analogy. Think of electricity like water flowing through pipes. That analogy becomes a cognitive anchor. The student can now hang ideas about voltage, current, and currents and resistance on that familiar framework. Using this hook, the teacher gives the students an existing schema upon which to hang their new learning about electricity. I've always remembered my science teacher referring to electric current like water flowing through pipes. Now, I've learned that when I'm speaking to a group or teaching, that creating a hook is essential. Creating a hook can take many forms. You may use questions like, if you only had $100 to feed 50 people, what would you do? Or, in 1969, two men left the safety of their spacecraft and boarded a small lunar landing craft that was hardly a craft. Made of lightweight material and only 13 feet in diameter, they were attempting to descend to land on the moon, a place where no one had ever been before, and they were about to take a step no human had ever taken. What do you think they were feeling? Or maybe you make it personal. Raise your hand if you've ever used Google Maps. Today, we're learning the math behind how it gets you from point A to point B. Now, many of you are building a business, and you have team meetings, and you share things with your team and train them from time to time. Try starting with a hook that helps them see why you are saying the things you are saying. In science terms, this is a cognitive anchor. Anchor their learning in something they already understand. Let's say you're teaching your team about overcoming the fear of making approaches. You may anchor them in this thought. Have you ever had someone make a recommendation or teach you something you didn't know? Did you follow that recommendation? I wear running shoes recommended to me by a woman I once met. She was a good runner and swore by these shoes, and I've worn them ever since. And I was grateful to her for telling me about them. Making an approach to shop at your online store is no different. It's just like making a recommendation. So remember to use cognitive anchors. The next thing I learned about effective teaching came from my PhD studies in education. I learned that our job as teachers and trainers is to provide scaffolding for our students and team members. Scaffolding is a temporary support provided by a teacher to help a learner accomplish a task they could not complete without that scaffolding. The term comes from construction scaffolding, and in construction, workers erect and stand on scaffolding while they build the walls of the structure. Then, once the building is completed, the scaffolding is removed. Just as workers use temporary structures to reach high places, learners use instructional scaffolds to reach higher levels of understanding. Now, there are various types of scaffolding that we build to help others. The first is modeling. When we model, others can rely on seeing us until they can do something on their own. The next is practice. As students practice, they gain the strength to stand on their own. In fact, early in my teaching career, I was taught the simple scaffolding model, and it's this: explain, demonstrate, practice, and evaluate. I've used it in training hundreds of times. A brief explanation of a principle, explain, is followed by a demonstration of how to use it, demonstrate. Then most of the training time is spent on practice, with the coach interrupting with more demonstration and evaluation from time to time. Explain, demonstrate, practice, evaluate. For example, let's say you're learning to hit a baseball. A brief explanation is followed by a coach demonstrating, then letting the player attempt over and over again. This is the time for encouragement, more modeling, and a little evaluation. Explain, demonstrate, practice, and evaluate. This model works. Use it next time you're doing a training. A teacher has the unique ability to help another person see a future that is worth aspiring to. Kobe Bryant grew up in a family that moved frequently because of his father's basketball career, spending much of his childhood in Italy before returning to the United States. And by the time he reached Lower Merion High School in Pennsylvania, he was already an exceptional basketball talent. Yet, for all his physical gifts, what set Kobe apart later in life wasn't just skill. It was discipline, focus, and an intense drive to improve. On one Olympic team, several of the players went out at night to party. They all returned at 5 a.m., tired, exhausted, and ready for bed. As they entered the hotel, there was Kobe Bryant, who had just woke up and was headed to the gym for an early morning workout. The players were shocked at his approach to being one of the greatest to play the game. One of the adults who helped cultivate this mindset for Kobe was Phil Dumas, an English teacher at Lower Merion. Dumas noticed early on that Kobe was highly competitive, not just on the court, but in life. He saw a young man who was capable of greatness, but needed guidance to channel his energy productively and reach his potential. Dumas encouraged Kobe to engage deeply with his studies, particularly in reading and writing, which helped Kobe develop critical thinking skills. He challenged Kobe to write essays that weren't just about homework compliance, but required analysis, reflection, and clear communication. He often told Kobe, "Talent is nothing without discipline. You can't let raw ability carry you. Your mind has to lead the way." Well, beyond academics, Dumas emphasized mental toughness. He introduced Kobe to lessons about goal setting and perseverance, lessons that were reinforced by small classroom challenges like timed assignments or complex essays. These lessons became internalized with Kobe, and he approached basketball like a mental exercise, not just a physical one. By the time Kobe entered the NBA straight out of high school, he carried these lessons with him. He became famous for his Mamba mentality. a term he coined to describe his relentless focus, preparation, and self-discipline. And Kobe later acknowledged that Dumas shaped not just his mind, but his approach to life. You know, recently I was talking with a very successful couple. They're now in their late 70s and have built a life and family that are remarkable. They have a lot of grandkids and great-grandkids who are healthy and education-minded. She shared that when they were young, her husband would sit in the hallway just after the kids went to bed. The kids would have their doors open and he would read stories and tell them stories. And this is how his kids learned a love of literature and learned to be creative. He was a teacher who left a legacy for his children by this very small habit. So I, being inspired by his example, have started reading to my grandkids when I get a chance to be with them. I have read and learned the science behind this. It says, when children hear words read aloud, their brains form new neural connections in areas related to language, comprehension, and auditory processing. Early exposure to language stimulates synapses formation, helping children process complex ideas later in life better. Repeated exposure to words and sounds strengthen neural pathways, making language processing faster and more efficient. And you'd be surprised at the benefits of reading with your children. Reading aloud introduces children to ideas they may not encounter in everyday conversation, helping them understand cause and effect, character motivations, and abstract concepts. Listening to stories trains working memory and attention span, which are crucial for learning in school. Discussing stories encourages children to make predictions, compare, and infer. Studies show that children who are read to regularly know thousands more words by the time they enter school than children who aren't. Hearing proper sentence structure, intonation, and vocabulary helps children internalize grammar and language rules naturally. And frequent exposure to books improves the ability to hear and manipulate sounds in words. Reading about different characters' perspectives teaches children to recognize and understand emotions, fosters emotional intelligence, and releases oxytocin, the bonding hormone, which strengthens attachment and security. These are just a few of the benefits of reading and teaching through books. This leads me to the next point. Teaching and training can happen through a variety of things. Constructionists in education have proven in many different research settings that significant learning happens when we don't just hear. In your business, learning by doing is perhaps the best way to teach your team members. Thomas was taught reading and writing by his mother, and with her encouragement, he was given the opportunity to try to create things that would help around the house. Because he contracted scarlet fever, he was deaf in one ear. She wanted him to learn by doing, so she encouraged him to experiment with a host of things. As a young man, he also sold newspapers and sold food on trains that were running through his town. He then moved to New York with a friend and started doing inventions in his friend's basement. He kept trying and testing various inventions with some success. He then turned his sights to the electric light bulb. Thomas Edison didn't invent the light bulb. Many came before him that did, but what he did do was develop the longest lasting light bulb, one that used a carbon filament and lasted about 1,200 hours. Edison would patent inventions in the phonograph, telegraph, motion pictures, rubber production, mining, the rechargeable battery, chemicals, and a host of other things, all because his mother wanted him to learn from doing. The Wright brothers are perhaps the most famous American pioneers in air travel, but all of this started because as young men, they were taught by doing. Their father brought home various things to test, including a toy helicopter. It was made of paper with a rubber band to twirl the blades, but this started their fascination with flying. They built their own printing press. They turned their attention to bicycles and a host of other things before they started working on gliders. Beginning in 1898, they tested glider designs over and over again. They did this by creating their own wind tunnel where they could test wing design. The engine they built to power their test aircraft was from aluminum, extremely rare at the time. They eliminated the heavy fuel pump, made creative designs in the drive chains, and in the end, the Wright's 1903 airplane had a wingspan of 40 feet, weighed 600 pounds, and had a 12-horsepower engine. Most of all, the plane had a control system developed by the brothers. And on December 17th in that year, flying into a 27-mile-an-hour headwind, the brothers completed three flights. One was reported at 852 feet in length. Years of testing and retesting would follow. They spent years in Europe soliciting support, learning and testing and retesting. They raised money, fought off criticism, endured crashes and injuries, and flat out would never quit. Perhaps the most famous flight of the Wright brothers was when Orville took his 82-year-old father on a nearly 7-minute flight. The aircraft rose to about 350 feet while the elderly Wright called to his son, "Higher, Orville, higher." All of this because they were taught by doing as children, and they were taught by teachers who saw their potential. So, as we end today, put into practice a few of these teaching skills and watch. You will have more impact on your team and family than ever before. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend and join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.